Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Tzadik Bet Aman Aleph by the two dots. Gemara here quotes from the Mishnah, which is Niseit al pi beitin teitzei upturah min hakorban. So if she gets married on the sack of beitin, then she still is subject to all the rules that she has to divorce. On the other hand, she is upturah min hakorban. She doesn't have to make a korban because she relied on beitin. So Amar Ziri. Our Mishnah is not the halacha, because we have a braita that governs in this instance. And that is the Tani Bei Midrusha. We have a braita that was brought. Horu Beitin Shushaka Chama. If Beitin gives a psak halacha that the sun set on Shabbat, and therefore you can go ahead and do work, Shabbat is over. Ublazov Zacha. And then a little bit later they see that the sun is still out. Ein zu hora'a ela ta'ut. That's not called a psak beitin. That's called a mistake. What's the difference between a psak beitin and a mistake is the culpability of the individuals. If you rely on a hora'a beitin, if you rely on a psak of beitin, then beitin is basically indemnifying you for your actions. So if you do something, you won't have to bring a korban. You won't be subject to the rules of culpability. On the other hand, if it's a mistake of beitin, then Beit Din didn't give you a psak, and you really, quote-unquote, didn't rely on something that was a psak Beit Din. And so because of that, you would have to bring a korban in that instance. Ze'iri says over here, our Mishnah that indicates that Beit Din basically indemnifies the woman is not like this braita, because this braita says that if you make a mistake, then it doesn't protect you from the korban. Our Mishnah is saying that Beit Din protected you from the korban. The underlying assumption in Ze'iri's statement is that when we follow the psak of Beit Din here with an Eid Echad, that is a mistake and not a hora'ah. That Beit Din made a mistake. And by making a mistake, you're not protected or indemnified from having to bring a korban afterwards. Rav Nachman Amar, hora'ahi. So Rav Nachman disagrees fundamentally and says that which is said in our Mishnah is not a mistake, but rather a psak halacha. Samar Rav Nachman Teda, dehora'ahi. I'll prove to you that our Mishnah is really a psak of Beit Din and not just a mistake. B'chol Torah kula eid echad lo mehemet. Anywhere else in the Torah, one eid has no bearing. Now, eid echad ne'eman b'yisurim is a separate area, but with regards to edut and the acceptance of Beit Din, of the edut of an individual, and based on that, we give a heter for a woman to get married, we find no such thing. This is the one unique circumstance in which we allow it. The reason that we allow it must be because overlaid on the Eid Echad is a Psak Beit Din that says we looked into the matter, we made a decision, and based on that decision, now she can get married. And that's why the Eid Echad is believed over here, because of the fact that it's a Rad Beit Din. My time, why is an Eid Echad believed here? Because Beit Din gave a Psak. The combination of the Eid Echad and the Psak Beit Din would allow this woman to go get married. An Eid Echad standalone would not give her that right. If an Eid Echad came and testified to her and she went and got married based on that, she would have no protection from what she did. She didn't have real Eidut. It wasn't something that she can rely on. So why are we relying on the Eid Echad? We rely on the Eid Echad because overlaid on that is this Psak Beit Din that in this instance we're going to allow an Eid Echad to govern because the woman will check out and look into the matter carefully. And because of that, we assume that the Eid Echad combined with that chazaka, that the woman will go and look into it carefully, is what brings us to this conclusion. But Beit Din over here, obviously, and in some sense, made a mistake in relying on her, but it was still a psak Beit Din based on the factors that were in front of them. So that's the proof that Rav Nachman brings to the fact that over here, it's a horat Beit Din. On the other hand, Amarova teda ta'otu. Rava comes in support of Ze'iri and says that the psak Beit Din over here is clearly a mistaken psak. It's a problem in fact, not a problem in the law or the hora of the Beit Din, which is the ilu horu Beit Din bechelev ubedam lehetera. Beit Din went ahead and gave a psak halacha that said this chelev or this dam was fine. Bahadur chazutayma li'isura. And then afterwards they changed their psak and said it is asur. So over here in these cases they originally thought it was mutar, then they changed their mind, I think it's asur. Ki hadrei v'amri lehetera. Then, in the third try at it, they came back and said it's mutar again. Lo meshkechinan lehu, we don't listen to them. So here we have them giving them psak leheter, psak leisur, and then going back to heter. We don't listen to them when they go back to heter. Now Rashi makes a small nuanced distinction here. He says when they were chazutaima to the isura is tam muvhak. They saw a solid reason to make it asur. V'chi ha'ade amri l'hetera, Rashi says, b'tam she'enu muvhak. Not with a solid reason, but, as they call it, nimuk chadash. A little nuance, a different angle on the case. So, in the case where they made it asur because they had some definitive thought, a process about this, and that's why they made it asur. When they come to make it mutar, they already had made it mutar in the first place. So the fact that they overrode the fact that it was beheter with something that's isur, means that they had a definitive thought about why it should be asur, despite the fact that they thought it was mutar before. Now when they come to make it heter again, it's just a different angle. It's not a new concept. It's not a new way to totally to look at this case. It's rather just a nuance in the case. Over there, we don't listen to them. Sharina, if you have an eid echad and comes and says that her husband passed away, we would let her get married. Atu trei, if two eidim come after that, asrano, then we would say that she is asura. I mean, the two eidim that show up afterwards and say that her husband's alive, we would say now she's asura. Kihadar ate eid achrina. Then if another single eid comes afterwards, sharinama, then we would allow her to get married again. My taima, la mishom ditautu. Why is it that we allow this eid echad in the end to come and undermine that which Beit Din said? Now, if it's hora'ah, then we just saw already that hora doesn't change. Because in the case by Chelev and Dam, where you first said it was mutar, asur, mutar, once you come to that third time, we don't allow you to change the psak halacha anymore. So if everything that was going on in Beit Din over here was psak halacha, hora'ah, then it should be subject to the same rules. And so the eid echad was mutar, shnei edim is asur, then you shouldn't be able to go back to mutar by the time the third eid shows up. If we are relying on hora'ah, the rules of hora'ah would say that you can't change it that third time. On the other hand, the fact that we do change it shows you that Beit Din is making a mistake, not hora'ah. I mean that the underlying information upon which they are basing their psak halacha is problematic, and a mistake can be rectified or a mistake can be changed by Beit Din. So then when they relied on the first eid, it was a mistake. Then they relied on the two eid, it was a mistake. By the time they get to the third eid that shows up, then they say, listen, we made another mistake. We don't have clear information. And therefore, the heter is a good heter at that point. So the argument here is really about how the eid echad functions in these situations. When Beit Din relies on this eid echad, how is it relying on this eid echad? So if you believe that the eid echad has a certain amount of independent nemanut, that he has ability to give us a derech to a psak halacha, then what's going on here is that the Beit Din is giving a hora'ah. They're giving a psak halacha. You have an aid that is ne'aman in some way. And then Beit Din is giving a psak halacha based on that. Or is the fact that an eid echad comes here have no impact halachically? The eid echad is good as if there were no eidim. But we need some sort of trigger for Beit Din to look into the matter or to at least investigate. And the eid echad is that trigger. It gives us the ability to make other conclusions. But Beit Din is simply taking evidence. And in that evidence, they're giving up psak halacha that it's muteret, even though we don't have clear edut to the matter. But if that's the case, then we're relying on Beit Din to interpret the facts and not give up psak halacha, because they don't have a right to psak halacha in that case, because there's no, they don't have the regular procedural evidence that would allow them to make up psak halacha. So therefore, they're making it a determination of fact, not a determination of law. So that if they're making simply a determination of law, psak halacha, hora'ah, then it'll be subject to all the rules of hora'ah. Number one is, it would indemnify the party that relies on it. Number two is, if you go back and forth, we wouldn't let you switch your mind three times, as we saw, if it's hora'ah. If it's simply Beit Din giving a determination of fact, then in that case, number one, you're not indemnified, because there was no psak halacha. It was simply they were giving you a interpretation of the facts. And number two is, no matter how many times it switches, Beit Din can switch their mind because the facts have changed. And it's not about a psak halacha, it's simply about the underlying facts. So here you have that machloket about how Beit Din is functioning with the eid echad. And it really mostly has to do with their interplay with the eid echad. How much power or how much ne'manut does the eid echad have? And therefore, what is Beit Din doing? If the more power the eid echad has, the more likely that the Beit Din is giving a hora'ah, psak halacha, a determination of law rather than a interpretation of fact. On the other hand, the less power the eid echad has, the more likely it is that Beit Din is actually determining the facts and not determining a law, not giving a psak halacha. And that's, you see here, that tension in the Gemara, the machloket, about what exactly Beit Din is doing in this instance. Obviously, the question here is, when the Eid Echad comes back, why is he believed over here? Right. So that's likely the scenario, which is that you had one Eid, two Eid, and then one Eid, now it becomes two and two. Two and two is a safek, then we generally, when we have a safek like that, we maintain the status quo. So, if you assume, so I say, if you have Eid Echad comes and says, mate Balo, and then she would have gotten married, then two Eidim come and say that he was alive, and therefore she's a surah, she has to be Tetze. When that last Eid shows up and says that, no, he really died, now you have two versus two. So we have, that's an Eidut Mukheshet, and the question, with the Eidut Mukheshet, we'd leave the status quo in place, because we don't have evidence to change it. That means that if she did divorce the husband already, we may not let her go back to that husband because the status quo is now she's already divorced from him. If she has yet to divorce him, maybe we won't force her to divorce him. So it's not clear from the Gemara what the case is, if she took action based on the two Eidim yet or not, because that might make a difference as to what the status quo is, because we might not let her get remarried again because of the fact that the Eidim come. Or you could argue in this case where she marries one of the Eidim and says, Bari Li, in that case, again, we will not be motzihur because she is relying on the aid and says that it's Bari Li, and therefore we'll let her go through with this. The Rashba, on the other hand, in addition to this explanation, brings an alternative explanation of the Gemara and says that in the first case of Chelev, they did not know the reason why that Beit Din was matirit. Then they came along and were oseret, and we have a clear reason as to why they were oseret. Then when they come back and they want to be matirit, we do not allow them to be matirit until they figure out why the first Beit Din or the first time they were matirit, because we know that they overrode that. But we don't know the reasoning behind it. And maybe the reasoning that you give now is the same reason that they had before, which they rejected. So until we know the reasoning behind the first hat there, we're not going to allow you to be matirit again, especially since we've already established the chezka de isur in this object based on the second psak. Whereas by the case of the woman, when the first aid comes, we are matir. Two aidim come, and now we are usir. When the third aid comes, we ignore the fact that there was an aid originally that says veheter, and now we look at this aid as bringing us new news. You're right, the first aid was believed like betre, like two people. But when two aidim came and were machishim, that wiped him out. But now we're starting afresh. We're starting from a clean slate, and then this new aid said that he died. Maybe he died at a different time, or he has a different piece of information. And therefore, we assume that that aid is correct. So, based on that, the Rashba says it's different. Hora'ah, you would have to know the reasoning behind the first heter in order to allow the third time to be matir. Whereas here, by the Eidim, we don't care why they were matir by the Eid Echad originally. As long as now we have an Eid Echad that's Neman Kebet Rei, that's enough to get us off the ground and be matir this woman. So that shows you that over here, it's not a din in Sak or Hora'ah, but rather it's a reliance on the facts that are being presented to us, and therefore it's a ta'ot and not a hora'ah. And the first aid misled us, and that's why we came to a mistaken conclusion. But now we have a new aid, and we can rely on that new aid, because every aid echad is independently ne'eman.
Alright, so now Gemara says, V'af Rabbi Eliezer savar de ta'utu. Also, Rabbi Eliezer believes that this psak of Beit Din here is a mistake and not a hora'ah. Titania, Rabbi Eliezer omer yikov hadin atahar, v'tavi chatat shmeina. The din will go through a mountain, meaning that we don't make any exceptions over here. We don't look for ways to get out. It's a tunnel through the mountain, and she's got to bring a big fat chatat. She did something wrong. She's got to bring a chatat. What happened to the fact that Beit Din gave her a psak halacha? Obviously, he believes that it's a ta'ot. And that's what it says. If you believe the psak of Beit Din here is a mistake, mishumachi matcha korban. Therefore, she's obligated to bring the korban in this case. If it is a psak halacha, then why should she have to bring a korban? She should be indemnified by Beit Din, the fact that Beit Din gave a psak. So am I matching korban? It says, so here we have another factor, which was never clarified by the Gemara, but horad Beit Din protecting individuals or indemnifying individuals is generally said, like Fred had mentioned before, by horiot, which is a case where the rove of the Am acted on the psak of Beit Din. And over there, the rove of Am, that's a helam dover shel tzibor, and there's a specific korban that is associated with that, which is the Beit Din brings the korban, and not the people. That's how the people are indemnified, because the rove of tzibor acted that way. The question becomes, when an individual acts on the psak of Beit Din, If an individual acts on the Pesach of Beit Din, Beit Din is not going to bring a Helam Dover Shel Tzibur. They're not going to bring such a Korban. Does that nevertheless protect the individual? The fact that they relied on the Pesach of Beit Din, are they then protected and indemnified by the Pesach of Beit Din? So that's what the Gemara says here. How do you know that the reason she has to bring a Korban over here is because we consider whatever Beit Din have done as a mistake? Maybe what Beit Din did was a Hora'ah. But she's an individual. And since she's only an individual that relied on Beit Din, individuals that rely on Beit Din have to bring a Korban. They have to bring a Korban because the indemnification of Beit Din doesn't help you in that case. It only helps you when they're going to be culpable, when they're going to be a Korban, which is when the Rovat Sibor acted on their Pesach Din. Here, when an individual acted on Pesach Din, they're not protected by the Beit Din. Okay, Gemara says, Imkain, if you think that that's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, that's why she's bringing a Korban over here, Ma'i Kova Din et Ahar. Then what does that mean, Yikova Din et Ahar? If Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is simply that Beit Din's indemnification doesn't help over here because she's a Yechida, she's an individual, then why do you have to say Yikova Din et Ahar? It's such a straightforward Pesach Halacha. Yikova Din et Ahar implies that there might have been an alternative, or you might have thought otherwise. And since you might have thought otherwise, I'm coming to make it clear that this is the route to go, and this is the way that we think. So what would have been the thought process? That Beit Din's Pesach over here is a Hora'ah and not a Ta'ot. So you would have thought she was Ptura'ah from the Korban. Along comes Rabbi Lezer and says, no, it's a mistake, not a Hora'ah, and therefore she's Chayevet B'Korban. If you say to me that Rabbi Lezer's opinion is that no matter what the Beit Din does, even by a Pesach Halacha, an individual brings a Korban, then that's a very simple Pesach Halacha. Of course she brings a Korban. Why would you even think that she's Ptura'ah in her Korban? There's no reason to believe she's Ptura'ah in her Korban. And then why does he have to say Yikova Din et Ahar? Just give a Pesach Halacha. When you say Yikova Din et Ahar, you're already implying that I'm saying something that's a little controversial, but I'm telling you this is the route that you gotta go and this is the way you gotta think about it. The fact that he makes that statement shows you that he is saying the reason she brings a Korban over here is because consider the Pesach Beit Din here to be a Ta'ot, a complete mistake, and not a Hora'ah. And that's why you bring the Korban, nothing to do with normal cases where we would say that no Beit Din protects you, no matter what the Pesach Halacha is, because otherwise he wouldn't have to use that Lashon Bikon of Adin et Ahar. Haru Beit Din Lina Sei. If Beit Din gave her a Pesach Halacha to go ahead and get married, and instead she goes ahead and does something wrong. So they basically said, listen, your husband's passed away. They give her a Pesach Halacha based on, let's assume even two Edim, whatever it was. Then she goes ahead, instead of marrying someone else, she goes ahead and does something that is illicit or illegal. Is she protected by that Pesach Beit Din? So our Mishnah says she's not protected by the Pesach Beit Din because Beit Din never cleared her to do something that was wrong. They cleared her to do something that was right. So Gemara wants to know, my Kilkula, what did she do wrong here that Beit Din's not protecting her? Rabbi should be Elazar Omer Zinta. Elazar says that she went ahead and had relations with people out of wedlock. She was promiscuous in her behavior. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Amana LeKohen Gadol Grusha B'Chalutza LeKohen Ajot. She entered into a marriage that was a problematic marriage. For instance, an almana, that widow that marries a Kohen Gadol, or a Grusha Chalutza that marries a Kohen Ajot. So the reason that it has to be Rabbi Lazar is because he's the Baal Plukto of Rabbi Yochanan. So it would be Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar argument. So that's the argument between them. What was the mistake that happened here? According to Rabbi Lazar, the mistake is that she simply behaved inappropriately. She had znut. Because Rabbi Yochanan, not only did she behave inappropriately, she entered into a marriage that was completely problematic. She got married, but it's a problematic marriage. That's the argument. So the Gemara says, Manda mar zinta kol shekein amanah kohen gadol. So the one who says zinta already is considered to be kilkala, then certainly if she enters into a problematic marriage, that is considered to be something that's kilkala. Manda mar amanah kohen gadol. The one who says, Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the problem or kilkala over here is when she enters into a problematic marriage, of zinta lo. By his note, we would not say that it's called Kilkala. My daima, the Amra, because, what's the reason? Because she can say to the Beit Din, Atan hu de shavitin pnuya. You made me into a single woman. You gave a Pesach Halacha that said I'm single. So now I go out and have znot. You may not like it. You may think that it's improper behavior, but we're not dealing with something that is illicit in any way. I didn't do something, quote unquote, that's wrong halakhically. It might be something that is less than desirable, but it's still not kilkala. It's not something that where she did something that was entering into a marriage that was problematic. It was just problematic behavior. Now that's, it's not so simple because over here, the question about a pnuya acting in this manner,
is she considered to be a zonah? Does she take on a shame zonah, which would be problematic? Depends. Maybe if she entered into a monogamous relationship while she was a pnuya, then maybe it doesn't involve an isur min haTorah, as opposed to if she was just freely sleeping with men, then maybe there she would get a gedder of zonah, and that would be illegal. It's not clear here what he means that she had a relationship or an intimate relationship with someone, but there are possibilities that she has an intimate relationship with someone, which is not the best way to be. Might be that it's frowned upon by the Chachamim, or violates certain restrictions of the Chachamim, or might even be giving up chances to do mitzvah taseh min haTorah. But nevertheless, she didn't do something that was illicit or illegal. She didn't violate a lo taseh. On the other hand, there are possibilities in cases of pnuyah where she could be in violation of a lo taseh. Now, what ends up happening here is she finds out that her husband's alive. So her fact that she has an intimate relation with someone else is obviously znut in that case, because it's an out-of-wedlock issue. But she says, I'm still protected by the Beit Din because you made me into a pnuya. And I did nothing wrong as a pnuya. As a pnuya, I acted like a pnuya. Now, promiscuously, but I acted like a pnuya. If she gets married, right, then clearly she did something wrong, because Beit Din never cleared her to go have an illegal marriage. They cleared her to go ahead and have a proper marriage. So Tanya Kavati de Rabbi Yochanan, we have a bright that supports Rabbi Yochanan's understanding here. Huru Beit Din Linasei. Beit Din gives a psak aloch over to go ahead and get married. Alcha v'kil kala. She went ahead and did something wrong. Kigon. Amen alek kohen gadol. Grusha b'chol tzadach ha'ed kohen ejot. Chayev e b'kurban. Alko bi'ah v'bi'ah. She has to bring a kurban on every bi'ah that she has in this problematic marriage. She will have to bring a kurban. Divrei Rabbi Elazar. Over here, Rabbi Elazar is the Tana. Before we're talking about Rabbi Elazar, the Amora. Here is Rabbi Elazar, the Tano, says you have to bring a korban every biyah. Chamimim, korban echad alko. You bring one korban for all the biyot. Modim chamim, Rabbi Elazar, shim nisei the chamisha b'nei Adam. If she gets married to five different men, shechayev a korban alko echad ve'echad. Then she's definitely chayev a korban for each man that she married, ho v'gufim v'chulakim, because they are separate entities. The question that they're dealing with here is a question about the differentiation within Averot. What does it take to make an Avera considered to be a separate Avera or a single Avera? Because a Korban Chatat can be brought on multiple manifestations of an Avera as long as it's considered to be one Helam, one forgetting. As long as it's one forgetting, one mistaken forgetting, then all of those actions are captured under the single Korban Chatat. If you view them as separate actions, then we have to bring a Korban for each one of those actions. So the argument here in the Braita is simply what makes it automatically a separate Avera. So according to Rabbi Elazar, every time she has Biah, that's entering into a new Avera, because that's a separate action. And since it's a completely separate action, that already defines it as a separate Avera, and she's having a Korban for each one of those Averot, despite the fact that there's only one forgetting here. There's only a Shogeg, because she thought her husband had passed away, and she acted continuously based on that Psak of Beit Din. On the other hand, the Chachamim say biot do not constitute a differentiated Avera. It's only if she had biah with separate individuals, then we would say that each individual she had biah with is a separate Avera. Because what we call gufim mechulakim. They are separate entities, and each entity is a separate Avera and won't be captured by a single chatat. So their argument in the Braita is simply about that fact, what's considered to be separate Averot or not separate Averot. But encompassed in this braita is the fact that what do they call kilkala is the same definition that Rabbi Yochanan gave, which is that she entered into a problematic marriage. It was an amanah, the Kohen Gadol, or Grusha v'chalutza, the Kohen Ejot, and that's what generated the problem over here, or generated the chatat over here, and she'll have to bring a korban because she's not protected by Beit Din. Beit Din did not grant her the right to enter into problematic marriages. All right, next Mishnah. Isha shalach bala ubna l'midinat hayam. A woman whose husband and son went overseas. The truth is, that does what Yom Tov point is that doesn't have to be both of them. It's even if one of them. We just need to have a lack of information regarding one of them in order for the safek to be true over here. Which is, Ubalva Amrula meit baleich, v'achar kach meit b'neich. And then she gets the word that they both passed away. Question is the order in which they passed away. So she gets the news that her husband first passed away, and then later her son passed away. That makes her ptura mina yibum and ptura mina chalitza, because her husband passed away. When her husband passed away, her son was still alive, which already cleared her from yibum and chalitza. Then when her son passed away, okay, That's later. That's after the fact. And we already saw in the Gemara, Darchei Darchei Noam, that it's determined at the moment of death, that's what determines. When her husband dies, if she has children at that time, that determines whether she's chayevet in Yibum and Chalitza. Over here, her son was alive. She's thrashed. She's free to go marry anyone. Vini Seit. And sure enough, she goes ahead and gets remarried. V'achar kach amrula, chiluf ayu devarim. That just the opposite happened. So now, what happened in this case was that her son died first, and then afterwards her husband passed away. So then, in that case, she was chayevet in Yibum. She had to perform Yibum, and instead of performing Yibum, she went ahead and married someone else. So therefore, Tetze, Vavlad, Rishon, Vachron, Mamzer. She has to divorce the person that she's married to. Vavlad, Rishon, Vachron, Mamzer. And the first and last are a Mamzer. The Gemara later on will discuss what does that mean, first and last. The answer to that in the end is that the one before the Shmua and the one after the Shmua, which means the one born before she got the news that it was just the opposite, and the one born after she got the news that it was just the opposite, both of them are Mamzerim. It doesn't really matter because the answer is it makes no difference before and after, and that's what the Gemara is going to ask. Why does it say Rishon Acharon? It's not relevant here. They're Mamzerim. All the children are Mamzerim. The question you do have to ask, which the Gemara will address, is, over here, what was the thing that she did wrong? She, in the end, her husband passed away. So either way, she's not an Eshet Ish. She only is a Shomeret Yavam. She is a woman who is a Yivama waiting for Yibum, and she needs to get Chalitza to free her to marry this other person. Instead, she married without Chalitza. That's a violation of an Isur Lav. At most, it's an Isur Lav that she went ahead and got married without getting Chalitza from her Yavam. So why over here is the Vlad Mamzer, so on and so forth? Why all these extreme measures against her? So the Gemara will conclude that this is authored by Rabbi Akiva, who believes that Chiyuvei Lavin generate a problem of Mamzerut. Because otherwise there should be no problem of Mamzerut over here, because we're only dealing with the Lav, we're not dealing with Chiyuvei Karet. Her husband for sure passed away. She's not an Eshet Ish. It's only a question if she's Chayevet in Yibum or not. So that question is a question of a Chiyuvei Lav. So again, as I mentioned before, it doesn't really matter if both of them are overseas. As long as one of them was overseas and they both passed away, the only question is who passed away first. You could have that same scenario as long as one of them is overseas and we don't know the exact timing of when that person passed away. So if the son was with her and her husband was overseas and her son passes away, but we get news that her husband also passed away, we just don't know if her husband passed away before the son or after the son. So that same safek can be generated even if they're both not overseas, even if one of them is overseas. The Mishnah seems to indicate it's a case where they're both overseas, so we just don't know the order in which it happened. So now, Amrullah made b'neich, v'achakach made baleich. So they said the opposite. In this case, they said that the Edim come and say that your son passed away first, then your husband passed away, which means that she is now chayevet in Yibum. V'nit Yabma. And she goes ahead and has Yibum. V'achakach Amrullah, chiluf hayu advarim. They come back and they tell her it was just the opposite. So now there, Teitzei v'avlad rishon achon mamzer, over here you do have a problem, because here, if she wasn't chayevet in Yibum, then she married Eshedach Shalom Akom Mitzvah. So now will be a question about Eshedach Shalom Akom Mitzvah is a Chiyub Karet. So in a Chiyub Karet, everybody agrees that the child is a Mamzer, because you're dealing with an issue of Chiyub Karet. So now, Amrullah made Baleich. It gets wind or news that her husband passed away, V'niseit, and she got married. V'achakach Amrullah Kayam Haya, Umeit. He was alive, but he died. The information that he died is correct, but it happened at a much later time than you thought. It wasn't at the time that they said that he had died. It happened, let's say, months later, a year later. In the interim, she had gotten married. So she got married relying on the fact that her husband was already passed away, but he had yet to have passed away. Now he has passed away. Nevertheless, Tetzei, V'avad Rishon Mamzer, V'acharon Einu Mamzer. So over here, she has to divorce the second husband because it was in the illicit marriage, it was an improper marriage, because when she married him, she was an Eshet Ish. But here, it makes a difference. The Vlad Rishon, the first child born, children born before in the news that her husband had really passed away, then the children born at that point in time are Mamzerim, because she was still married at that time. Acharon, children born after the news that her husband for sure is dead, just happened at a later point, those children are not Mamzerim, because she's no longer an Eshet Ish. Mimanavshach, her husband passed away, she can't be an Eshet Ish, and therefore the children born after the news that he died, but died much later, then children born after that point in time are clearly not Mamzerim, because she's no longer an Eshet Ish. But she still has a divorce because the marriage started from a point in which it was problematic because her husband had yet to pass away then. Amr la meit baleich, this is something we quoted earlier in the perek, which is, they get wind that her husband had passed away, v'nit katsha, and she has kiddushin. She doesn't get married, doesn't consummate the marriage, just kiddushin. V'arka kach babala. Then her husband shows up, muteret lakzorlo. She can go back to her original husband, afopi shenatan la'achron get lo pasla minakuna. And even if the latter husband here gives her a get, it does not make her pasul minakuna, because the get was not necessary, wasn't needed over here. The second kiddushin are not considered to be kiddushin whatsoever. This is what we discussed in the Gemara. Here, there's no isur. She didn't do anything wrong because she never consummated the marriage. The kiddushin never take hold because she's an eshet ish. She didn't do anything be isur, therefore she's not penalized to lose out on both her husband and the second husband because she never got to the point where she acted on it and consummated the marriage. Therefore, we just say the kiddushin fall apart because they were not kiddushin because she was married. And she goes back to her original husband because there's no penalty over here. Since there's no kiddushin, the get has no impact whatsoever. Because so if he gives her a get, it still doesn't ruin her for the kuna because the get wasn't necessary.
A woman who is divorced from another man, they may not take. That is a kohen.
But if she gets a get from somebody who's not her husband, that does not posel her from the kihuna. It's only a get that's given to a woman who's married to this individual that is posel her from the kuna. If some third party comes along and gives a woman a get, that doesn't change the fact that she can marry a kohen. She's not considered to be a grusha just because she got a get. And that's what's happening over here. She was never married to this individual because she was an eshet ish. He gives her a get. It's like some guy walking out of the shuk and giving her a get. That has no impact. So now Gemara asks, my Rishon, my Acharon. So I already prefaced this when we spoke about it in the Mishnah. What is Rishon and Acharon here?
The way that we explained it, that Rishon means before the news came that the decision was premised on wrong information.
And Acharon is after we got the information. Litnei Vlad Mamzer. Just write the Vlad is Mamzer. It makes no difference. In the end, the halacha is the same. Whether before the Shmua or after the Shmua, the Vlad is a Mamzer. Why are you differentiating over here?
So Mar says, Mishum to Gabay the Mitnei Seifa. Because of the third case in the Mishnah, in the third case of the Mishnah, which is Amar la meit baleich v'niseit, v'achar kach amar la kayam haya umeit,
in the case where they told her husband passed away, and then they come back and say, no, he was alive when you got married, but mate, now he's dead.
Harishon mamzer, v'acharon eno mamzer.
There it does make a difference whether the child was born before the news or after the news, because the one born before the news is a mamzer, the one born after the news is not a mamzer.
Tananami resha, rishon v'acharon mamzer.
So too in the Reisha it says the Rishon and Acharon are Mamzer, meaning before the Shmua and after the Shmua Mamzer, even though it makes no difference. And you could have simply written Vlad Mamzer just for parallel structure in the Mishnah where it does make a difference in the latter case. So therefore in the former cases, they also put in Rishon Acharon because of that.
So now Tan Rabbanan, this again we mentioned when we were in the Mishnah, Zo Divrei Rabbi Akiva.
Our Mishnah is clearly authored by Rabbi Akiva, Shei Omer, Ein Kiddushin Tofsim B'Chayvei Lavin. Because Kedushin are not Tovsim B'chayvei Lavin, this woman was supposed to have Yibum. Instead of having Yibum, she goes out and gets married. So she's in violation of an Iser Lav. She has supposed to have Yibum or Chalitza with one of the brothers. Instead, she got married. So the Chiyuv Lav generates over here a problem Mamzerut. That's only according to Rabbi Akiva, who says Chiyuv Lavin generate Mamzerut. That there is no such thing as a mamzer from a woman who is a yivama, because it's an isur lav.
Gemara says, "V'leima in mamzer mechay v'lavin."
Why don't you just say it that way? Just say that there is no such thing as a mamzer from a chiyuv lav. Why are you just saying, "Oh, there's no such thing as a mamzer from a yivama"?
So, haitano hachtano de Rabbi Akiva.
That is because we even have a machloket within the shita of Rabbi Akiva. Actually, three opinions within the shita of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, or we know that Rabbi Akiva says that there's a chiyuv lav. Kedushim are not tovsim b'chiyuvei lav, and they generate a mamzer. How limited or how expansive is the scope of that statement of Rabbi Akiva? There are those that say that it's fully expansive, which means that Rabbi Akiva would say, any chiyuv lav, kedushim aren't tovsim, produces a mamzer. Number two is even chiyuvei asei. Things that are just restricted by asei. Also over there, Rabbi Akiva says, that's an illicit marriage. No kedushim and mamzerut. That's one opinion. There's another opinion in Rabbi Akiva, which says that it's very narrow. The Rabbi Akiva says that by chiyuvei lavin of she'er, only by chiyuvei lavin which involve kirva, relatives, those chiyuvei lavin, those issues produce a mamzer. But if it's not a chiyuv lav associated with she'er, then there is no mamzer. There's a middle opinion who says that any chiyuv lav generates a mamzer, but a seid does not generate a mamzer. So there are three different positions in Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah clearly believes that Rabbi Akiva thinks that there's a chiyuv lav, kedushin ein sofsin, produces a mamzer, even in cases that are not she'er. Because over here, the lav is one de'ibum with the yavama. And the yavama is not a isur of relationships or relatives, right? It's an isur of her getting chalitzar yibum because she has to deal with this individual who has an obligation to deal with her, but it's not because of she'er. So therefore, in this case, the fact that our Mishnah says that kedushin ein tofsin, the product is a mamzer, shows you that they believe that chiyuve lav and any chiyuv lav generates a problem of mamzerut and kedushin ein tofsin. So what the Gemara says is the fact that the chachamim are here say ein mamzer mi yivama. There is no such thing as a mamzer from a yivama, shows you that they believe that in general there is a mamzer from a chiyuve lavin, but it's only chiyuve lavin of she'er, of relatives, of arayot. That's what it says here. This Tana of Rabbi Kiva says, Michai v'lavin to she'er havi mamzer. Only something that's produced from a lav, that is, she'er, generates a mamzer. Michai v'lavin greida, from a regular lav, like yibum, lo havi mamzer. They're not a mamzer. Now, over here, this machloket of al val chachamim ramim, im mamzer mi yivama. Over here, there's a major machloket rishonim as to what does that mean. Does that mean that there is no mamzer at all? In these cases, the Chachamim believe that the child is not considered to be a mamzer. Or do we say that what our Mishnah is speaking about is midoraita? Midoraita, the child is not considered a mamzer. But still, midorabanan, it is considered to be a mamzer. The child is considered to be a mamzer. That's why this very large Tosafot over here argues in favor of saying that midorabanan, there still is a mamzer based on a Mishnah in Gittin, which indicates that the child is considered to be a mamzer. Since the child is considered to be a mamzer, how do you reconcile with our Mishnah? So one of the ways to reconcile is to say, our Mishnah is talking on a Doraita level, that Mishnah is talking about a rabbinic level. The other possibility is that Mishnah argues. That Mishnah is premised on a day on the Yerushalmi that Tosafot quotes, that in Ochanami, that even the Chachamim agree that there is mamzerut over here. So if you want to reconcile between them, you would have to say our Mishnah is Doraita, the Mishnah in Gittin is the Rabbanan. If you want to say they're arguing, then you could even say that the Chachamim believe that mamzerut does not apply at all, based on our Gemara here, and there's no mamzerut, not Doraita, not the Rabbanan, as opposed to the Mishnah Gittin, which thinks that the Rabbanan think there is mamzerut, made the Rabbanan. The Gemara continues, Amar Yudu Merav, Minayin Shein Kedushin Tovsim B'Yivama. How do we know that Kedushin are not Tovsim B'Yivama for someone, a Yivama, who's waiting for Yibom to go marry a third party? So the Gemara says, Shenemar lo tiyeh ish rameta chutzal ish zar. She's not allowed to marry a foreign individual. She's not allowed to marry a party that is not her yivama. Lo tehe ba havaya bizar. So that she may not have any kiddushim. Havaya is considered to be a connection. She can't have a connection to a third party. So here you see that kiddushin are not tofsim by yivama. Shmuel amar banyutenu. In our poverty, in our affliction, in our difficulty, tzricha get. She has to get a get from this husband that she married, even though she was a shomeret yavam. Mispeka le the Shmuel. Shmuel does not know which way to interpret the pasuk. Hai lo tia eshet amet. That pasuk that we just quoted. Ila lav hu da'ata? Is it come to teach us that there is an iser lav over here, and therefore she will get malkot for doing this because it's an iser lav? Ila lo tafsi ba kedushin hu da'ata? Or is it come to teach us that there is no tfisat kedushin over here? So is it coming to teach us that there is no kiddushin, or is it coming to teach us that there's a lav, that there's a Easter lav for her to do this? So the Rabbeinu Tam, if you look down below, the Tosfot says that there's machlok between Rav and Shmuel over here is simply whether there is tfisat kiddushin. Everybody agrees that there's a lav here. Everybody agrees that there's an Easter lav. The only question is there also a block against kiddushin that she can't perform the kiddushin? So Rabbeinu Tam says, Ilav greida hawa da'ata, ila kedushin lo tafsin nami hu da'ata. Does it also come to say that the kedushin are not tofes? So the machloket between them is not whether there is a lav. Everybody agrees there's a lav. The only question is it also stop the kedushin from going through? Others believe that there's a complete machloket here. Rav says, this says there's no kedushin, but there's also no lav. Shmuel is saying the other way around. Maybe there's a lav and no kedushin. So that the question here is, what do you use the pasuk for? Do you use it for lav, or do you use it for no kedushin tofsin? And they're mutually exclusive. So that's one way to look at the machloket. The Rabbeinu Tam says, no, it simply is there an add-on here. There is a lav according to everybody, simply arguing about whether the Kedushin are Tofsin or not Tofsin based on this. So now the Gemara says, Amar Lei Rav Mori Bar Rachel to Rav Ashi. Rav Mori Bar Rachel is actually Shmuel's grandson. So it says to Rav Ashi, Hachi Amar HaMeimar. This is what HaMeimar says, Halacha Kavate de Shmuel. The Halacha is like Shmuel. So then Amar Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi extrapolates from that. Hashtad Amar HaMeimar Hilchata Kavate de Shmuel. Now that we have that the Halacha is like Shmuel. So in a case where this woman was supposed to perform Yibum, but she didn't know, she didn't have the information, and she went ahead and got married to another party. The Yavam that is waiting for her is a Kohen. So the Yavam that's waiting for her as a Kohen, now Mimonov Shaki can't marry her. Because according to Shmuel, it's a Safek, and she's going to have to get a get from the party that she married. Once she gets a get from that party, the Kohen can't marry her because she's a Grusha. So Mimonov Shach, the Kohen can't perform Yibum with her. She's out. So then why not have the Kohen perform Chalitza with her now and let her stay with her husband? If the Kohen performs Chalitza, then now she's freed from the problem of Yibum and she can stay with her husband, Mimonov Shach. Either she's in violation of a lav, but the Kedushin are Tofsin, and therefore she's married, but illegally. As soon as she does Chalitza, that takes away the illegal marriage. On the other hand, if you believe that Kedushin are not Tofsin by the party, then she never married him. And then once she gives her Chalitza, she can go ahead, the marriage continues, and she's fine in the marriage. Because now he's freed her to go get married, and the Kedushin be Tofsin. So Mimonov Shach should get married. The problem is, Itagure Itagar, she's benefiting. She acted improperly, and now we're doing something to benefit her. She's being, Amargen Matsinu Chutei Niskar. Here's a sinner who's benefiting. She married illegally or improperly, and now we're going to do something that's basically going to allow her to stay with this new husband. So by doing that, you're actually doing something supporting the improper act that she had over here. So how could you say that? So that's not a good extrapolation of this din. So Gemara says, Elimaya Yevama Yisrael. Now the case is here where it's a Yevama Yisrael, meaning that the Yabam is the Yisrael. And then he could marry her now. Notein la sheni get. The second individual, the one she's married to now, has to give her a get. And now she can go have Yibum with the brother that was waiting. Because her marriage in the interim does not ruin the fact that she can go back to the Yavam. So now that statement of Rav Ashi is, once we have the din of Shmuel, that there is a safek, whether Kedushin or Tofsin or not Tofsin over here, nevertheless, the activity that she engaged in marrying this individual does not ruin her from going back to her Yivama. Since it doesn't ruin her from going back to her Yivama, what we're going to say is, to the second husband, give her a divorce, and now she can go back, and the Yavam can perform Yibum with her, because he did not disqualify her from Yibum. The fact that she had this relationship with this individual in the interim did not disqualify her. Now, for Kohen, it'll be problematic, because he's going to give a get, and then she'll be a Grusha. But for Yisrael, that's not a problem. So therefore, she can go back to the husband. This solution is a major machloket rishonim, and we'll come back every second. Amarav Gido, Amarav Chia Bar Yosef, Amarav, Yevama Kiddushin Ein Ba, Nisuin Yesh Ba. With regards to Yevama, she does not have the ability to produce Kiddushin, but she does have the ability to produce Nisuin. Mar says, I Kiddushin Ein Ba, Nisuin Ema Ein Ba. You can't have one end or the other. If Kiddushin doesn't work, then Nisuin doesn't work. If Nisuin works, then Kiddushin works. You can't be half married. You can't have certain parts of marriage work and not work. If you say Kedushin are not Tofes in this woman, then Nisuin are also not Tofes. If you say Nisuin are Tofes, then certainly Kedushin are Tofes in this woman. Either she can or cannot be married. So, Ema Kedushin v'Nisuin Emba. If they say, when Rav says that, in Kedushin Tofsin v'Yevama, it means that nothing works over here. Not Kedushin, not Nisuin. She is never married to that party because she's blocked from engaging in other relationships by the fact that she is a Shomeret Yevam. V'Yibayit Ema, my Nisuin, Yeshba. What does it mean that she has nisuin? Is that biznut? Could Rav Nuna, Damar Rav Nuna, Shomeret Yavam Shezinta, Asuru Libma. That a Shomeret Yavam that has a illicit relationship in the interim, you cannot perform Yibum with her afterwards because she is Negdar Kazona, and therefore she's out of the picture and you cannot marry her afterwards. So that's what it means. If you only reach the point of Kiddushin, then she didn't do anything wrong yet, and therefore she can go back to the Yavam. On the other hand, if she has nisuin being a lashon nikia, not for, because she can't consummate the marriage, she can't create a marriage here. Nisuin just means that she had znot, she actually had bial with him, she had intimacy with him, then she's now blocked from going back to the yabam. So So it's a euphemistic way of saying that once she has bia, while she's a shomeret yavam, she's now disqualified from performing yibum anymore. Like we said originally, kiddushin ein ba nisuin yeshba. No kiddushin, yes nisuin. The miflacha b'isha shalach bala l'midinat hayam. Because it gets confused with the case of a husband that goes overseas. So underlying this technically is she doesn't have any problem here either way. There's no kiddushin and there's no nisuin and she doesn't require a get, she doesn't require anything. How come by the case of nisuin we're going to say she's married and forced to get? By the case of kiddushin we don't say that. That is because of the din in our Mishnah. Shalach bala l'midinat hayam. A case where her husband went overseas. And in the interim, she got word that her husband passed away, she has kiddushin. In the case that she has kiddushin and her husband shows up, we said there that the kiddushin are not meaningful, and she can go back to her original husband. On the other hand, if she has nisuin with that party, and then her husband shows up, she has to get divorced from both of them, there's that whole process. The fear here is that this is a case of yibum, where again, all the information was a similar structure to being overseas, and she's getting the information piecemeal. She went ahead and she got married to a third party thinking she was not chayevet in Yibum. Then we get information that she really was chayevet in Yibum. So how far did that case go? If she only had kiddushin with the other party, then that's no worse than the case where her husband also was away and she finds out her husband's alive and she had kiddushin. Over there, there's no penalty. She doesn't have to get divorced from the other party. Over here, by kiddushin, not toface. But if we say by the case of nisuin, she doesn't need to get a get, people are going to think the same thing is true when it was a husband instead of the yavam. In the case of yavam, the kiddushin aren't tofsin, so we say no divorce, she doesn't have to do anything. If we say that, then what happens in the case where a husband's overseas, said to be dead, then shows up after she married this other individual? You're going to say over there also, she doesn't need a divorce, she doesn't need to do anything. The answer is she does. In that case, our Mishnah tells us she needs a divorce. So this is up to that problem. We're worried about that problem, so therefore by yavam, by nisuin, we're going to force her to get a get, even though it's not necessary. It's to protect against the case where it's her husband instead of the Yavam. To say that case, we definitely need a get because that's the penalty of the Chachamim. So now, Amar Rabbi Yanai, B'chabura Nimnu B'gamru, when the Chachamim got together, they came to the conclusion, Ein Kiddushin Topsim B'Yavama. There is no Kiddushin with regards to a Yavama, meaning that the Halacha is like what Rav suggested before, that the Kiddushin are not Tofes whatsoever when it comes to a Yavama. So that's the conclusion here. In kedushin tovsin means that if she tries to marry a third party, the kedushin have no effect. That even though there's only an Isur Lav, and according to most people with the Isur Lav, kedushin are tovsin. So how come over here kedushin are not tovsin if there's an Isur Lav? The answer is because we have a special pasuk that says there is no havaya here by the case of Yivamah. Now, in conclusion, there is a major, major machlok of Rishonim as to what the loche is in these scenarios. The Rabbeinu Tam says that in a case where a woman did not know she had a yavam, and then she got engaged to someone else, he allowed her to continue with that marriage after she got chalitza from the yavam. So here, in this case, the question here is with regards to forcing the yavam to give her chalitza, or forcing the second husband to give her a get so she can go back to the yavam. When do we force chalitza, and when do we force the get on the second party? So over here, she was nitkadsha. She already had kiddushin with another party. She didn't know she had an obligation of yibum. Over there, the Rabbeinu Tam says, we tell the yavam, give her chalitza, and let her continue with the marriage. Had she already reached nisuin, we wouldn't let that happen. We wouldn't force the yavam to give her chalitza to be mati her, because she already did an isura, and therefore we would not be mati her. So since we wouldn't be mati her, we don't tell the yavam to do chalitza. Now, that's only, and the Rabbeinu Tam qualifies this, that's only the case where the Yavam was planning on doing Chalitza anyway. So since he was going to do Chalitza anyway, and by telling him to do the Chalitza, we're going to free her up to marry this other individual, we tell him, do the Chalitza and protect this woman. But if it already reaches the point of Nisuin, there's already a Knas, and she's out of luck, and she's going to lose both of them. She won't be able to go back to the Yavam, and she also won't be able to stay with her new Baal. So the second question comes up with regards to the get. Do we force the sheni to give her a get in order to go back to the yavam? So there the Rishonim argue about whether we force the sheni to give a get, or if he chooses to give a get, we allow him to give a get so that she can go back to the yavam, but we don't force him to give a get. Rashi, on the other hand, seems to indicate our case here is a case where niseit, even if she got fully married, meaning that even if she had kiddushin and nisuin, we're going to tell the yavam to do chalitza to free her up to continue in this marriage. So that's how Rashi seems to be learning it. there are others like the Bala Lachot Gidolot, who says it depends if she has children or not. If she already has children from this individual that she got married to, and now we realize she was supposed to perform Ibul, we're going to force him to do Chalitza. Because otherwise, you're going to have a problem. It's going to cast aspersions on the children that were born of this marriage. And therefore, we want to clear it up and give her Chalitza. If she has yet to have children, then we're not going to force him to give her a Chalitza, because the problematic marriage is all that there is. There aren't children born of that problematic marriage. And then maybe over there we'll penalize her and say that, no, we're not going to give you chalitza to free you up to stay in this marriage. And then they bring also the Rabbeinu Chananel, posek lehalachot gedolot, that even from kiddushin, even if it was only kiddushin, we're going to force them to get divorced. Meaning that we don't ask for chalitza in that case, even at the level of kiddushin. So you see there, all the Rishonim here are arguing about when exactly do we ask the Yavam to give chalitza, and the same thing is true by the other party. When do we ask him to give a get so she can go back to the Yavam? When do we ask for that? Is that only when we're at the level of Kiddushin, that is the Shita der Beinu Tam? Or is that even at the level of Nisuin that we ask them to do that? That's Rashi's Shita. Or do we say it doesn't matter? Kiddushin or Nisuin, we don't ask them at all. That's the Shita der Rabbeinu Chananel, according to Bala Lachot Gedolot. But even in that Shita, they differentiate between whether there are children already born of the marriage or not born of the marriage, because if there are children, we want to protect the children from having aspersions cast on their yichus, therefore we'll force Chalitza. In case where there are no children, then there's no issue for the children or casting aspersion on the children, then we won't ask for chalitza. So it's a major machloket amongst the Rishonim as to how to paskan halacha here based on the information that we have here, based on Rav Ashi's conclusion that number one, a shomeret yavam that goes ahead and gets married, then technically we ask the yavam to give chalitza. When do we ask for that in order to free her up? And number two is, in a case where she got married and didn't have Nisuin yet, if she gets a divorce from this party, she could go back to the Yavam. Again, when do we ask her, when do we force that party to give her a divorce so that she can go back to the Yavam? And now the Gemara says, I'm Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi, lo mishnatenu hizu? You say that this is the conclusion of the Amoraim. I can bring you a proof from a Mishnah that this is the case, that there is no kedushin tovsim by Yavamah. That's none. Omer li yishari ad mikudeshet li, you are married to me, l'achar she'et gayer, after I convert. L'achar she'tid gayri, or after you convert. L'achar she'eshtachrer, after I'm freed from being an Eved Knani. Or l'achar she'tishtachri, or after you are freed from being a Shifcha Knanit. L'achar she'mot balech, you're married to me after your husband passes away. L'achar she'tamut achoteich, or after my wife, your sister, passes away, then I will have kiddushin with you. Oh, that after your Yavam performs Chalitza with you, then I will have marriage with you. In all these cases, it doesn't work. Why doesn't it work by the case of Yavama? In all the other cases, it's not possible for him to generate the Kiddushin at this moment, and therefore we can say in the future he can't generate Kiddushin if he doesn't have the ability to generate it right now. But in the case of Yavama, if it is legal for him, it's maybe illegal, but it's still tofes, the kedushin are tofes here. If he marries her before chalitza, then why can't he generate kedushin now, saying, once you get chalitza, kedushin will go into effect? Because he could actually do the kedushin right now and they would go into effect. Because it's only a yivamah, it's an isur lav, and an isur lav, kedushin are tofsin. So if he could generate it now, he should be able to generate it by making a tznai for the future. The answer is, obviously, that he can't generate it now. Why can't he generate it now? Because kedushin are not tofes by a shomeret yavam by yavama. That's waiting for chalitza. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's proof from the Mishnah to the fact that in kedushin tofsin. So Amar Leih, Rabbi Yanai says Rabbi Yochanan, ilav de dalai la chaspa mi mashkachat marganita tutei. Had I not taken away the shord that was on top, you would not have found the jewel that was underneath. I mean, that only because I suggested to you that kedushin are not tofsim by Yavama, did you think that that was the reason in the Mishnah? If it had not been for that, you wouldn't have thought that was the reason in the Mishnah. You would just have thought it was dover shelo bali olam, something that has yet to happen. You can't enter into a transaction about something that's in the future. The fact that I told you this information, that's what caused you to think of the Mishnah in that light. So I'm going to lay Reish Lakish. So Rabbi Yoshua says to Rabbi Yochanan, Ilav the kalsach gavir abba. Had it not been for the fact that Rabbi Yanai praised your interpretation of the Mishnah, I would have explained to you, Matnita and Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Akiva, Damar in Kedushin Tovsim, B'chai V'lavin. Who says that it has to be a problem here because it's in Kedushin Tovsim, period, by Yevama?
Maybe this is Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva thinks saying condition helps him in any chayv ilavin. But it says, "Hey, Rabbi Akiva, v'chi amar la lachar she'achlotz laich yivameich litfas bach hidushay." So he says, if it's Rabbi Akiva, and he says, after you get chalitza, I want to have kiddushin with you, then it would have worked. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that you can acquire or give over acquisition of something that is yet to exist in the world, something that will be in the future. So that's what he's trying to do here. He's trying to generate a transaction in the future. He's saying, I will have kiddushin with you in the future. That's not. Koneim shani oseh lepicha. If a woman says, I will not do anything for you, for her husband, her masa yadayim, her output, her production, she says, is asur to you beneder. So the Chachamim or the Tanakhama says, you don't have to get hafara for that, because she doesn't have a right to it. The husband has a lien on her output, because he's providing her mizonot. Since he's providing her mizonot, then she has no right to take away or to asur her masa yadayim. Therefore, she doesn't need hafara. Rabbi Kiva Omer, yafer. We have to do afara here. Shema tadif alav. Maybe there'll be more than necessary. Yoter min ha-ra'uy lo, more than he's entitled to. So that's a machloket, the Gemara in Nidorim about this, which is that the husband, by giving her mizonot, plus a ma kesef, plus spending money, is entitled to anything she produces, plus the excess that she produces. So if he gives her all these things, he's entitled to everything. But then there's something called hadafai de dachak. She really presses herself and works extra, extra hard, she can produce a little extra. Who does that a little extra belong to? So the Tanakhama says that still belongs to her husband, and therefore she has no right to ask her that. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva believes that little extra belongs to the woman, and she can ask her it. And therefore, we need a hafara here, because it's the husband wants to keep that amount, he's got to do hafarat nedarim. Even though in general, hafarat nedarim, nullifying a neder, only applies to things that are beino beina, things that deal with the personal relationship of the husband and wife. Over here, Tosafot says it's considered to be beino beina because he can never be so careful. If he's entitled to her normal output, plus her extra output, the super extra output, how is he going to know when she crossed over the line between extra output and super extra output? And therefore, it's going to bring him into a predicament that is untenable. And that's why he's entitled to do hafara over here. Now, ha itmar ala, am Rav Huna bray the Rav Yeshua, bo meret ikachu yadai lo sehem. So that the way that she phrased the neder over here is by saying that my hands will be dedicated to their creator, which is basically means that she did it, yadaim itnehu ba'alma. She did it in a way that made it on something that exists now. Output, her ability to produce something, is something in the future. It's something that doesn't exist yet. Davar shelo ba'alei olam. The fact that she makes a neder on it is osirit. How does she do that? How does she osir something shelo ba'alei olam? The answer is that Rabbi Akiva believes you can be osir davar shelo ba'alei olam. On the other hand, Rav Huna Breder Yeshua says that's not the case. The case here is where she took the neder referencing her hands, which is basically says, my hands are kadosh to Hashem. By saying her hands are kadosh to Hashem, the hands are here now. What she meant is the output. But she made the neder chal on something that exists today, and then the implications will have implications in the future when she produces it. By making her hands, quote-unquote, kodesh, she therefore says, whatever they produce will not be asur to my husband. So, but she focused it on the hands instead of on the future production. Upliga the Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and this argues on Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. The Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Rav Huna kirav, Rav kirebi Yanai, Rabbi Yanai kirebi Chia, Rabbi Chia kirabi, Rabbi kirebi Meir, Rabbi Meir kirebi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov kirebi Akiva. Davar dadam makne davar shalom ba'al yodam. A person is allowed to give over something that has yet to exist. This argues on Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak because Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says over here that we have a line of opinions over here that say that Rabbi Akiva believes Adam Makneh Davar Shalom Ba'alei Olam. And his reason in that Mishnah in the Dorim is because of Davar Shalom Ba'alei Olam. Rav Huna Breid, Rabbi Yeshua's explanation says no. Rabbi Akiva's explanation in that Mishnah has nothing to do with Davar Shalom Ba'alei Olam. It's the nature in which way she took the nether. She said it about her hands instead of her output, so it was a Davar Shalom Ba'alei Olam. The fact that Rav Huna Breid, Rabbi Yeshua interprets that Mishnah to mean that not Rabbi Akiva believes Davar Shalom Ba'alei Olam is okay to have kinyanim about it, but rather he creates a scenario where it's not a davar shelo ba'alei olam, so shows you that he doesn't think Rabbi Akiva holds that way. On the other hand, it's clear here that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says that Rav Huna, and here is a Rav Huna, who's a generation after Rav, is a Talmud of Rav. Rav was a Talmud of Rabbi, or the generation below Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yanai, who is a generation below Rabbi Chia, and Rabbi Chia is a generation below Rabbi. And Rabbi is a generation after Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir is a generation after Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov was a generation after Rabbi Akiva, and all this line, they all hold Adam Makne Dabai Shel Elo Le'olam. By saying that, he thinks the reason in our Mishnah is because Rabbi Akiva believes Dabai Shel Elo Le'olam is okay to have a kinyan or make a nether about it. So that's the argument here. Rabbi Huna Bar Yeshua says clearly that's not what Rabbi Akiva thinks, and therefore he comes up with a different interpretation in the Mishnah. But then Rabbi Nachman Yitzchok says that's not the case here because we have a whole line of Amoraim and Tanaim that believe that Dabar Adam Makneh Dabar Shel Elo Le'olam, and Rabbi Akiva is amongst those Tanaim. He's the first of those Tanaim that believes that. And therefore, the reason in the Mishnah in the Darim is because it's Dabar Shel Elo Ba'al Olam. Now, if it's Dabar Shel Elo Ba'al Olam, that's a question on Reish Lakish's opinion. Reish Lakish said that we'll make the author of our Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva, who says that ain't Kedushin Tofsin Bechayv Elavin. That's not a good solution for the Mishnah, because even if you say Kedushin can be Tofis now, but he can make a transaction for the future, because Rabbi Akiva believes some Dabar Shel Elo Ba'al Olam you can make transactions about. So even though he's unable to perform Kedushin now with this Yavamah, but because in the future he can make a transaction for the future and it would work out. So making Rabbi Akiva the author of our Mishnah over here would not help you. Because you make him the author of the Mishnah, even though Kedusha not tofsin by a Yevama, who's waiting because it's a Chiyuv Lav, nevertheless, it still would work because he made a future transaction which Rabbi Akiva approves. So Reish Lakish's suggestion that Rabbi Akiva be the author of that Mishnah will not work because Rabbi Akiva's other opinion will ruin that. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan's suggestion over here that it's a proof that Kedushin are not tofsim, even according to the Rabbanon, because Rabbi Akiva would not be a solution. It has to be the Rabbanon who think that it is, number one, Kedushin ain't tofsim, and number two is, Dabar Shel Elo Ba'al Olam, you can't make a kinyan about. Okay, we're going to stop over here, 10 lines down on Sadi Gimel Amud Aleph, and tomorrow the Gemara will go through each of those opinions that we listed out there. How do we know they believe, Adam Makneh, Dabar Shel Elo Ba'al Olam, that you can have transactions about things that have yet to exist?